Welcome to the program for Thursday, January 5th, 2012 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, of course, is Industry Chatter Today, and my guest is Dan Kent. He's the Federal Chief Technology Officer for Cisco. And Dan, it's great to see you. Thank you for coming in today.
Great. Thanks for having me, Francis.
Happy to do it. I didn't do what I have done the last couple of days, which is say 2011 when I say the date as I introduce somebody. So you're a good influence on me.
Happy New Year.
Thank you. Same to you. First of all, talk about some of the things, many things, that Cisco does for its federal clients.
Sure. Well, Cisco has been in the federal business for quite a while now, about 22 years. And we do everything from infrastructure, such as routers and switches, help build out that network that they all use, to applications, collaboration applications, voice and video, and how agencies actually communicate amongst themselves and amongst other agencies.
There's probably a perception that may still be out there that Cisco is the routers and switches company, and maybe not as much in the other areas. What are some other areas where you play real heavily?
That's right. Like I said, we got into the collaboration, voice, and video about 10 years ago, so we're fairly well known there. Mm-hmm. Recently, 3 years ago, we really got heavily into the data center space. So we're doing a lot with servers and applications that run on top servers, and building out new next-generation data centers and actually building out clouds. Mm-hmm. So that's probably one of the newer areas that we're in that people are still surprised to hear from us that we actually do.
Yeah. Tell me about the difference between a next-generation data center and cloud, because I think if you looked at the models that Vivek and Steve Van Roekel have talked about, they appear, at least on the surface, to be mutually exclusive. What's the difference?
No, I don't think they're exclusive at all. I truly see the next generation data center being a cloud. We can call it a private cloud, but cloud obviously implies a lot more than just that next generation data center. And as I see the next generation IT rolling out, there will be a portfolio of clouds, whether it's software as a service from Google or Cisco, or infrastructure from Amazon or companies like Terramark and Verizon. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, their own private cloud, which is the next generation data center. And I really look at the difference between today's data center and that next generation data center as one which is truly virtualized and then automated. So I can turn up assets as I need them, turn them down when I don't need them. Mm-hmm. And when I keep that in my own private infrastructure, it's called a private cloud, and that truly is a next-generation data center.
There are any number of flavors of cloud, and you've hit on a couple of the more popular ones right now. The private, the public, the hybrid seem to be the ones that get talked about the most. Is it fair to say that those are the potential flavors that we'll have to deal with, or is there still maybe, are we still in an evolutionary phase of cloud computing where there's more to come?
Yeah, I think there will be more to come. I also support not just federal, but also state and local. And one of the really successful deployments of cloud over there is called a community cloud. So a state agency or a pseudo agency delivering services to multiple other agencies under that into a, it's not a public cloud, certainly. It's built for specific groups or constituents. So not a single agency, it's multiple agencies, or it might be school districts. So this concept of a community cloud, we have in the federal government as well, more around data sharing. But you can also do it around infrastructure sharing as well. So I think as we start to understand what cloud actually is, we've defined that through NIST pretty well, start to internalize that and have the various components of IT look at it, you're going to see some more evolution of cloud capabilities come out. It could be as simple as our teleworking. Teleworking can be some type of cloud application.
Now, you said we've gotten some good guidance from NIST about the definitions of cloud computing, and I agree with you on that. Does everybody agree with that, though? Or are the people that you talk to at agencies more comfortable now understanding what it is because of the guidance that's come out of NIST?
I think so. I think we are still educating ourselves on what cloud is. Certainly from an industry perspective, by having NIST help define it, we now can all get on the same sheet and talk about it. Now, that doesn't mean that Dan Kent representing Cisco is going to give you the same cloud answer as a, let's say, a Microsoft, because they're coming from an application perspective. Typically, I'm coming from an infrastructure perspective. But very quickly, we can at least articulate that I'm going to be talking about infrastructure as a service versus software as a service might be coming down from a Google or Microsoft. So let's, now that we know what the difference is, let's start talking about infrastructure service and how that can help you in your agency and meet your mission needs.
And I think for a long time, there was a lot of confusion that revolved around the fact that people weren't even speaking the same language when they were talking about cloud, where in the scenario that you're painting, it sounds like people are at least speaking, using the same words to describe the same thing.
That's right. It might take a couple of sentences to get to that point, But now we can at least get to that point. We have a reference architecture that we can work off of.
So is it fair to say then, in your experience, that the resistance to cloud or the initial apprehension about it is fading away and people are going there because they understand it, or are they still going there because they're told they have to do it?
I think we're gone. We're beyond I don't know what I don't know. Mm-hmm. And now is I know I don't know what I should know, and I do know other aspects where I have to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
So I think bigger apprehension now is probably based more on education and knowledge rather than I just don't feel comfortable about it.
Yeah.
So whether it's, you know, simple security issues or impact on my operational model, or, boy, the business model just doesn't quite work for me,
mm-hmm.
There's apprehension still. And as we mature this market, we'll figure those out. But it's more based on real educated thought processes rather than just I don't have a good gut instinct.
Yeah. I want to be clear about the business model part. That resistance seems to be pretty much gone from what I'm seeing. Is that what you're experiencing too?
We struggle within acquisitions within the federal government and cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, and certainly the GSA is working on how we can make that simpler to put into the traditional models that we have, you know, contract models that we have out there. But if you look at truly cloud buying it as a per use,
mm-hmm.
that's not typical in the government acquisition model. So we have to figure that out.
But that's from the acquisition shop, not from the IT department.
That's correct.
Is that right?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
So you do have that, you know, IT wants it, they buy off on it, but how do I actually make that happen?
Yeah, how do I convince the CAO's office that we should really do it this way? What are you experiencing at Cisco as far as being a good way to do that, to educate the acquisition teams that this is a cost-effective way to do what you need to do?
Well, we do just that. We have a lot of seminars that we give. We have a lot of one-on-ones that I'm constantly going out to government agencies and not just IT, but mm-hmm. the business side as well as the acquisitions, and telling them, here's how we see it. And, of course, we say go also talk with our peers in industry because, you know, you got to put the whole patch the whole picture together.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still a lot of education going on that. I think the technology piece is almost further down the road than the business piece right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the business piece is probably more complicated because now you get into acquisition policy and how do we address that? How do I address the month-to-month payments of mm-hmm. something that is going to be sitting in my infrastructure. So it's a little more difficult to address.
Mm-hmm.
And then you add on top of that the certifications and the compliancy side. So the technical parts, I think we're in pretty good shape. It's the compliance and acquisition that we're really focused on right now.
If I was going to guess, I would guess that the software as a service model is probably easier to get the acquisition teams to understand than the infrastructure as a service, because you buy a server, you only buy it once. You're not paying a monthly or annual subscription for it.
That's right.
Where you're used to spending money every year for software licenses, I'm guessing. Is that fair to say?
It is true, but the you know, you're used to spending a yearly software license fee or 3 or 5 year or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're doing that as a month to month possibly.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some rationalization of that.
Yeah.
And the industry itself is trying to rationalize that as well because
sure.
it's a different business model for us.
Mm-hmm.
And,
you do have the advantage as the agency though of being able on a month to month basis to reassess exactly how many you need. I just had Congressman Joe Walsh on the show yesterday.
Right.
Congressman Walsh introduced a bill, an amendment in the defense DHS authorization bill this year
mm-hmm.
that had to do with unnecessary software licenses,
sure.
where it was going to require Richard Spires to go through and do an inventory of every software license at DHS. And I asked him, what's the effect of this amendment on software as a service? He wasn't sure, because that's just not something that Congress has gotten to yet,
sure.
to have the agency get to. So I that part of it, it's easy to understand. If Congress doesn't have a handle on it, it's not hard to see where the acquisition teams would have the same issue.
And you also have the vendor community, right? Because we're not used to getting paid month to month either,
mm-hmm.
right? So certainly in SaaS, that's a fairly normal model, but there's not a lot of SaaS out there,
right?
Honestly, compared to the rest of the software market.
Yeah.
Whereas we're used to either a perpetual license or maybe there is an enterprise license, which is very popular in the federal government, enterprise license agreement. And at the end of the year, we true up or true down
mm-hmm.
the cost, which is that's the model that most of us have been working with in the last 2 or 3 years. So SAS is a little different spin on that, but I'm not sure we will go from a month-to-month rationalization of the numbers because the scale and how to make that happen is pretty complicated.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it will be a quarterly or a yearly where we rationalize that.
We've mentioned software as a service. We've mentioned infrastructure as a service. There are lots of others as a services out there.
Right.
And I want to pull back a little bit and talk about another as a service concept when we come back from the break. My guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM today is Dan Kent. He's the Federal Chief Technology Officer at Cisco. And we'll continue our conversation on Industry Chatter in just a moment.
The Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Here's Joseph Klimovich, the CIO at NOAA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Emerging Technologies, sponsored by Isilon.
The network capacity, as we try to move large data sets, we're spending a lot of time, effort, and money into improving our network capacity.
Right.
In NOAA, we've got hundreds and hundreds of sites across the country, and if we really want to take advantage of these capabilities at all these sites, we need
gotta
to
move that data.
Got to move it.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
And now here is Gary Newgard, Director of Federal Solutions for Isilon, the newest division of EMC.
At Isilon, we're challenging government agencies to think differently about their storage, because when they do, they recognize there's a better, simpler way. Isilon's scale-out storage platform is a powerful yet simple way to manage data and applications, enabling agencies to expect more from the storage environment.
When your expanding data requires effective storage, visit isilon.com. That's isilon.com.
Moving your enterprise to the cloud doesn't mean you have to let go of IT control. With BMC's proven cloud lifecycle management from IronBow, you can visualize and manage data and applications in public, private, or hybrid clouds through a single pane of glass. It gives you the control you need to deliver peak performance for users. Find out more about BMC Cloud Lifecycle Management and the BMC Public Sector Forum at ironbow.com. Keep your IT in view and under control in the cloud.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Tom Temin here with a preview of tomorrow's Federal Drive. The president charts a new course for the nation's military future. We'll have expert analysis on what it means for the DoD agencies themselves. Plus, we'll find out how agency information technology budgets fare under the 2012 budget. How much more can you do with less anyhow? Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Dan Kent of Cisco is my guest on Industry Chatter today. And I mentioned before the break, we've talked about a number of different as-a-services.
Mm-hmm.
When I was at ELC in the fall, I heard some folks talking in the hallways about eventually everything as a service. And some folks believe that that is the next logical progression of some of the things that we've already talked about on this show and some of the other things that are available as a service. What do you think about that possibility of eventually agencies being able to buy everything that they want on whatever scale they want and that scale sliding so quickly?
Sure. I honestly think that over time there'll be more things that'll go to the cloud, but we'll always have certain things that will never go to the cloud. And we're actually seeing this already in other industries. A company called Zynga, you're probably familiar with Farmville or Cityville. Well, they use the cloud primarily when they launch a new application. So Cityville was their new application they launched last year. And they use the cloud because they didn't know how much assets they would need to store that and how many people would jump on that application on Facebook. So they use the cloud. Once they hit a certain period of time, the threshold, they knew exactly what the attributes were going to be for that application based on all their other applications. So once they figured that out, it was cheaper, more affordable to bring it back in-house and use their own IT. So I think the use of cloud is going to be, I think it'll be pervasive, but I think it'll be also directed on certain places where it makes business sense. In other places where it doesn't, you won't use it. And we'll see, same thing within the government, right? If you have mission-critical information, you might feel more confident to put that in your own private cloud. And I bring up private cloud because I do believe that private cloud is a viable cloud model. Within Cisco, we have our own private cloud. And our model within Cisco's private cloud is for all of our engineers to be able to scale up and scale down based on their needs. And research and development is a very highly compute intensive, but it also goes in cycles. So we have this fluctuation of assets. But our target is to meet Amazon pricing. And we found that in our if we build out our data centers properly, we can actually be cheaper than Amazon in our own private cloud. So I think having said that, again, we're only going to scale so much. And if you have to get, you know, take one data center and go to the next data center and you only have 10% capacity, though, then the pricing of the business model changes. So so I think, again, we will use a portfolio of clouds, but I think the internal cloud or private cloud will be a tool. And everything as a service, I think it sounds great today, but the reality as we go past the hype curve and come into rationalization, a lot of things will go as a service, but not everything as a service.
The hype curve, I think, is a great way to put it because I'm seeing lots of companies, no reflection on any particular one, but it's kind of like cybersecurity, and we'll talk about cybersecurity. Sure. If we can attach the name cybersecurity to it, we'll sell more of it.
That's
same
right.
thing with cloud. I'm starting to see that around data analytics is another
big data,
area.
Absolutely.
We have big data. If we can stick big data on it, somebody will buy it. And I'm wondering what you're expecting to see. We're at the beginning here of 2012, and we have the police department right behind us. They're not coming to get me. I know that. But as the year begins, what are you expecting to see as far as real utilization for some of these big hyped terms rather than just these massive shifts?
Yes, IT is very well known for jumping on trends and and pushing those out.
Big bandwagons.
We like that, right? And I'm a big fan of that, personally. I think you'll continue to see the growth of cloud. I think cloud is going to be driven probably as much by mobile computing and bring-your-own-device type applications because they do go hand-in-hand. It's a really nice fit there. So you're going to continue to see the growth of cloud. I don't think cloud is going to replace 50% of IT this year. You're probably talking a 10 or 15-year cycle before cloud is truly at that percentage point of overall IT. Cybersecurity, we're going to be beyond the confusion state. I think we have to get back, and as I talk with a lot of my customers about cybersecurity, it's really about visibility. And that understanding is out there now. Give me some visibility, and I think we're all as industry looking at how we can help provide our customers with the visibility, cross-platform, broad views. And so once they have the visibility, they can start making rational decisions on what they need to do to address the situation that they're in, whether it's an attack or whatnot. And we're focused there. So you're going to see some real movement, I think, in visibility tools for cybersecurity. Helps drive the overall cyber hygiene. I think that's an area that most of our agencies are looking. Let's get back to the blocking and tackling of cyber, right? They certainly have been doing a lot of focus on education, but there's a lot of cyber hygiene aspects that we can do in the basic infrastructure itself, and we're going to focus there. I still think cyber has a long way before it's truly integrated and understood within the commercial world, but eventually, and we're starting to see it in the financials, the understanding of what cyber is and why it's important will go beyond just a federal world into the financials, eventually into retail, eventually mm-hmm. across all industries. And we'll realize that we can have a cyber secure environment. And again, it ties very nicely with cloud as well, because when you talk multi-tenancy of a cloud, you really need that cyber mm-hmm. secure environment.
Yeah.
Big data and the whole analytics, I think that's the area where we're just hitting the hype cycle now.
Okay.
And so I think we have probably this year will be the real hype there.
Uh-huh.
And next year we'll probably see more of the rationalization and more real world deployments of that.
Mm-hmm.
In 2013, but it'll be a fun year talking about it this year.
Yeah, you used a term there that makes I think IT people groan all across government, and that's bring your own device.
Yes,
and I want to focus on that when we come back from the break, and we will do that when I continue my conversation with Dan Kent. He is the Federal Chief Technology Officer for Cisco, and we'll continue speaking in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
America's top show about planning for retirement is on 1500 AM WFED. Sunday mornings at 8, it's the Financial Safari. Each week, America's income planner, Coach Pete DeRuda, sits down with father-daughter duo from Northern Virginia, retirement planners Don and Jill O'Rourke from O'Rourke Asset Management. Sunday mornings at 8, it's the Financial Safari on 1500 AM WFED.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Navy Rear Admiral Retired Elizabeth A. Height, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector Cybersecurity Practice, HP Enterprise Services, on the Cybersecurity Combating Threats to Our Software Environment panel, sponsored by Hewlett-Packard.
Look at what the National Defense Authorization Act, signed last January, has required the Department of Defense to do, and that is require the department to implement software security assurance capabilities for both deployed software and that software that is being delivered.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective, and that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys are now training their sights on a new target, exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help governments secure mission-critical applications by designing security in from the beginning, finding the vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com/HP.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly one in three children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
Spotting spreading measles. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Measles is one of the most infectious viral diseases there is, so it can spread very quickly among unvaccinated people. At the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Paul Rota has been studying measles outbreaks in Europe. One tool uses genetic information on the virus to track its spread. Dr. Rota says the tracking showed the ability of the virus to spread quickly in unvaccinated populations.
The more people who are vaccinated in the community, the less the infection can spread. It's also important to remember that the vaccine used to prevent measles in the U.S. also prevents rubella and mumps.
Most states require two doses of measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine before a child starts school. An article on measles is in the CDC journal Emerging Infectious Diseases. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon Family Groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you could learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Industry Chatter today is Dan Kent. He's Federal Chief Technology Officer at Cisco. And we talked a bit before the break about bring your own device. And I mentioned during the commercials that I was at the event where Vivek Kundra first talked about bring your own device. Mm-hmm. And I saw the agency people's faces go white and the industry people started to salivate, right? As he said, right, we're going to allow folks to bring in their own devices. This concept is really, has really thrown some agencies for a loop as they try to figure out how to integrate this right on top of all the other initiatives and so on. What are you seeing agencies doing mm-hmm to try to move into this space, move this direction?
Yeah, I would say, probably 6 months before that conversation that you saw, we saw it with all of the CIOs once iPad came out.
Mm-hmm.
There's this infatuation with the iPad and what it can do. And so we've been talking with agencies for well over a year and a half about this. Now, BYOD is a bring your own device. BYOD is really the term we're using this year. But before then, it was mobility and secure mobility.
Mm-hmm.
And so every agency that I'm working with is looking at being able to deploy secure mobility
mm-hmm
across the board. Of course, we have iPads. We have Droid devices out there. We have laptops and netbooks. The question is, which is the right one, and can we leave it open for everyone? In the state and local and in education, they want to leave it open for everybody. If you own one, let you get on to that. But the reality is you can have some type of controls, right? You have to have security. You have to be able to make sure that when that device gets lost or gets misplaced, the data that's on that device is wiped clean, and the data that's on that device is not accessible by other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're working with, right, is how can we secure that data, not only at rest but also in flight. So mm-hmm how do we encrypt it from point to point? So every agency is looking at – and it's not an easy problem to solve, right, especially with when you're talking about some of the roles that our government customers use and the data that they have.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to address the infrastructure. We have to address the endpoint. We have to address the data itself. And that's where earlier I talked about this intersection between cloud and mobile computing. – It's because the best way to deliver this type of capability in the most secure manner is by not pushing a lot of data down. You push just enough data that the user can get what they need
mm-hmm
to make the decision. That doesn't mean it has to be a whole database. It's just a subset. It's the attributes that they need to look at. And so we have the ability to do that now. There are lots of technologies for encryption, for identification and access controls, encryption at the device when it stores, refreshing that device. We have all of the pieces are there right now. It really is about getting through certification process,
mm-hmm,
getting agencies comfortable with these new technologies, 802.11i, 802.11x, and these are just protocols that we use to make all this stuff happen,
mm-hmm,
and making sure that they're comfortable with it not only in the government agency, but more realistically when there's that employee sitting out at Starbucks mm-hmm or sitting at an airport.
Yeah. I was thinking back to, I believe it was November or so, when Roger Baker talked about a strategy for that
sure
at VA. And he talked about in particular, tablet computing. And he said, we're going to set up an infrastructure so iPads can get on, Android tablets, and the BlackBerry playbook. Well, mm-hmm, at this point in time, this is only 2 months ago, the playbook is pretty much out to lunch.
Right.
I mean, it's going to be non-existent if it's not already. And so I wonder what impact the ephemeral nature of some mobile technology is on what agencies are going to try to do, because theoretically, mm-hmm, the odds that somebody is now going to bring a playbook to VA and try to get it on the network is so small as to maybe render the work that was done there moot.
Sure. And I think as we've seen in industry and seeing in some of the agencies, the best way to do this is pick two or three devices that you think are going to be successful. And you said that brought up the playbook. Even though that's probably gone by the wayside and has missed the mark,
mm-hmm,
if you look at how many BlackBerry devices are in the government, it probably is the bulk of the mobile devices right now being used by government agencies is still that BlackBerry. I have one as well. But you're right. The next generation probably won't be the playbook. It's probably going to be a Droid and an Apple as leading those. And by the way, Cisco has a nice Droid device that we have deployed and we'll work with government.
You didn't bring one along by any chance,
did you? I
didn't.
I should have.
Dang it.
We've taken an interesting approach where we've taken a video and voice as the core application for that and put it in the Droid device. But anyway, you have to pick two or three that you think are going to make it, and you spend your time on those, and especially while we're still new in this transition. Get comfortable with it. Get the agency and employees used to working with it. Because honestly, if you had one Apple and one Droid device and you certified just those two, that's a whole heck of a lot further than where we are today, which is just getting email.
And I understand, too, that an agency doesn't want to be in a situation where you're endorsing one particular product or one particular series of products where it looks like there's – I mean, who wants to get into the whole favoritism thing? Why did you choose those guys and not our device and all that kind of business?
Yeah, it's hard, especially in a regulated environment. Because everyone you do does cost money. And I know we'll probably talk a little bit more about FedRAMP because that's a good way of saving money. But from a vendor perspective, if I have to I have to certify, and government has to certify, and there's costs on both sides. The vendor has to spend money to get it certified. Government has to spend money to certify it. So you almost have to, you know, set the level of playing field. There's going to be costs associated. If you're going to select the two operating systems, and maybe there's under Apple and then Android, maybe you have two devices, let the industry work it out and figure out who's going to be willing to make the investment, because it's investment on both sides.
You talked about FedRAMP. Let's get right to that.
Sure.
And when we come back from the break, Dan Kent of Cisco is my guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a minute.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Army is moving toward launching its own app store exclusively for intelligence users. By 2014, the service plans to roll out a number of new features to its distributed common ground system for intelligence collection and analysis. Among them will be an app mall that will let members of the Army intelligence community select widgets that tap into the centralized intelligence system the Army's building. As of now, Army officials say the system's aggregating data from 317 separate intelligence sources.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com. Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Dean Hunter is the Deputy Director of Facility Security and Contracting at OPM.
When the National Weather Service forecasts an inch of snow or any amount of ice to affect the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, that kicks off our protocols to conduct a COG conference call. We kick off the call at 3 a.m. We get on a secondary conference call with OPM senior staff. Our goal is to get that decision out no later than 4 a.m.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Spotting spreading measles. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlo with HHS HealthBeat. Measles is one of the most infectious viral diseases there is, so it can spread very quickly among unvaccinated people. At the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Paul Roda has been studying measles outbreaks in Europe. One tool uses genetic information on the virus to track its spread. Dr. Roda says the tracking showed the ability of the virus to spread quickly in unvaccinated populations.
The more people who are vaccinated in the community, the less the infection can spread. It's also important to remember that the vaccine used to prevent measles measles in the U.S. also prevents rubella and mumps.
Most states require two doses of measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine before a child starts school. An article on measles is in the CDC journal Emerging Infectious Diseases. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Industry chatter every Thursday in the 3 o'clock hour, where we talk to leaders in the industry that serves the federal government. My guest today is Dan Kent from Cisco. I appreciate you being here today and enjoying this conversation. As we talk about security, which we've done quite a bit, we talk about cloud, which we've done quite a bit, the natural intersection there is FedRAMP and what the federal government is doing to try to set security standards for cloud computing. The general industry response so far seems to be this is a good idea, it's headed in the right direction, and we'll see how it works out. Is that where you fall on that?
Yeah, absolutely. If anybody that's had to go through the certification and accreditation process would know that if I could do it less times, it's better for me and better for the government.
Uh-huh.
And really, that's what the spirit of FedRAMP is all about. Certify it once, have reciprocity amongst agencies on that certification, and do the delta, right? If there's a little bit more requirements at one agency than the other, don't start from scratch. Just worry about the delta. And that's what FedRAMP is all about, having a single source for the main certification. So as a cloud provider, and Cisco has a cloud application that we deliver, we will go through FedRAMP. And so if I only have to do that once rather than, 35 times,
sure,
that's a good thing.
All right, so I'll play devil's advocate here for a minute, because lots of agencies, there have been other times where the government has tried the do once, use many approach that Steve Van Roekel outlined. And we see it even in the commercial off-the-shelf software business, where an agency says, yeah, it doesn't quite work for me. So how do you convince the agencies that FedRAMP is sufficient for the certifications, for the security requirements that they have, without them saying, well, on top of it, we also want our own little thing, which is, of course, going to be different than the other 34 organizations that are out there?
Yeah, typically where we see that the difference is, it's because the infrastructure in the application system itself has so many differences. Where you're going to see FedRAMP being successful is the software as a service market, right? In that software as a service market, and let's use my friends over at Google, their Gmail application. That Gmail application is the same for every agency, right? The government version will be the same. The infrastructure is the same. So there's no real differences in the system itself. It might be differences in how they use them or the insertion points within specific agency. And so, therefore, the infrastructure in the system itself is all the same. Conversely, when you go through CNA process, there's always, I have a different server than you had over there at HHS, or I'm using this application, but I'm using a different version of the application than you use. I have to worry about that. So a lot of the thing with software as a service, it really is all about standardization, and that's how we get our costs down. And so that's why I think the FedRAMP will work there very nicely.
So the more standardization, the better result for the agency too, and not just for the vendor.
Absolutely, right, because it costs the agencies money to do these certifications and accreditations, and it takes them time. And so if they don't have to do a full CNA for this application because, every other agency did it and there's no changes, it saves them money and gets them up faster. Again, I don't think that every application is going to go into that SaaS environment. And certainly, especially within the federal government, a lot of their applications are very customized. And so the more customization you have, the less likely it will be in the cloud. Just the business model doesn't work that
way.
But for these standard applications like email and office products, you'll probably see those right in the SaaS environment.
Is there are we at a point yet, or will we be at a point soon, do you think, where it no longer makes sense to not move, like, immediately? We talked before we went on the air about NOAA now moving, I think they moved like 25,000 users.
Email users.
To Google Apps, and other agencies have done the same thing. GSA is the biggest one that I've seen so far. But are we at that point yet, or will we be soon, where it just doesn't make any sense to keep doing it the way you're doing it?
I think it's going to be application at a time, application specific.
With the commodity stuff, though, like email in particular is what I'm thinking about.
Well, it's interesting. I think email is one of those that once everyone came in, this is a great, it's an easy app. I think now that they're doing it and they're realizing there are other issues with putting it in the cloud, so how do I operationalize that?
Yeah.
Does it really meet my security requirements?
Uh-huh.
And a lot of work was done ahead of time, but they're also looking now back after and saying, does it really make sense? So there's a lot of lessons being learned there, and I think as, you know, the whole cloud market grows and evolves, we're going to address some of those up front.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, I don't think it makes sense to just do, you know, take these six applications, put them all in the cloud. We're
right.
not there yet.
Okay. We're going to shift gears here a little bit. You used a term earlier that I talked about a little bit yesterday with three professors from the National Defense University's iCollege that I want to add to my list earlier of projected buzzwords for 2012, and that's cyber hygiene.
Cyber hygiene.
The concept of cyber hygiene. And you mentioned, too, the importance of weaving cyber hygiene into operations rather than tacking it on at the end.
Right.
As agencies start to shift, especially from legacy systems to cloud systems, and bring in new solutions,
mm-hmm.
is cyber hygiene sufficiently woven in that model, or are we still kind of in the bolt-on phase? Here's your new solution, and we're also going to tack on this product or this solution
right.
to try to make sure that it stays clean.
No, I think we're definitely in the early phase.
Mm-hmm.
We when I talk about cyber hygiene, I start right at the very, you know, layer one of the OSI stack. Yeah, I've got cables going in, and I'm not necessarily tracking them, or I don't have a way of seeing when that cable has been unplugged, and what are the tools that I have that I'm using to help me with my overall cyber strategy. There's a lot of things that our agencies have done. By the way, it's no different than the federal government than it is in commercial,
mm-hmm.
that they purchased. They just didn't deploy because, A, we, you know, there's a gap between engineering and the operations team, or when we came to deploy it, we didn't have all the pieces, so we just moved forward, and IT's been moving very fast over the last decade and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole lot of capabilities that agencies have. If they just stop, let's look at what we can do from a very systematic, basic blocking and tackling, turn on this feature of this switch, use this firewall capability, and really basic things. That's where I'm talking about cyber hygiene. It goes all the way back to the endpoint as well.
Mm-hmm.
So start there, and then we can worry about the new applications that will come on. We can actually go in parallel right now, but
mm-hmm.
to your point, eventually it has to be every application, every program that gets deployed has to have those cyber hygiene capabilities built into it. It should be part of every program up
mm-hmm.
front.
An observation, and I want you to tell me if you agree with this observation or disagree. Over the past maybe 3 to 5 years, there's been a shift in the cybersecurity mindset among IT pros in government, from protecting my network hardware to protecting my data, the stuff that I'm holding.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an accurate observation on my part, do you think? And is that transition, do you think, close to complete? Because it seems to me that's where the focus should be, on
right.
protecting my stuff. I don't care if somebody can penetrate a server, provided I've got the protections on the information that's on that. So they can't get at the stuff that they really want.
I think that you're seeing both. We definitely protect the data. But at the same point, what you find, a lot of the recent attacks aren't the data at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's the devices themselves that, you know, it's that USB port that get put into this computer that then sends some type of malware to another computer.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't have anything to do with your data at all. But it was an anomaly that was happening, that if my network could understand that was an anomaly, I would have been able to find it.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't find out, unfortunately, until 6 months later. It infected
right.
60,000 computers. So I think you have to do both. Certainly protecting the data, and we talk about tools like VDI and limiting the control of the data and limiting where it actually goes, and virtual desktop infrastructure
mm-hmm.
in the mobile environment is a great way of doing that. But we also have to basically look at the infrastructure itself and know when our infrastructure is attacked, because that's really where we find most of the more complicated attacks are happening.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't necessarily, well, there is the data leakage, obviously,
mm-hmm.
but there's also this ability to put something out there that it attacks the device themselves and sends information back about the infrastructure itself.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to do both.
You mentioned a little nugget there that I want to draw out when we come back to wrap up our conversation. Dan Kent of Cisco is my guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue in just a minute.
The Washington Capitals are bringing the excitement of hockey to local classrooms with Caps at School. Caps at School is a free online curriculum-enhancing teaching tool for grades 1 through 6 that uses the sport of hockey to teach science, math, language, art, health, and physical education. Teachers and students participating in Caps at School can also win visits from Capitals players and Slapshot teachers. For more information on how to enroll your class for free, visit capsatschool.com.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers. September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Moving your enterprise to the cloud doesn't mean you have to let go of IT control. With BMC's proven cloud lifecycle management from IronBow, you can visualize and manage data and applications in public, private, or hybrid clouds through a single pane of glass. It gives you the control you need to deliver peak performance for users. Find out more about BMC Cloud Lifecycle Management and the BMC Public Sector Forum at ironbow.com. Keep your IT in view and under control in the cloud. Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
Dashboards are all the rage on federal websites these days. At the Federal Communications Commission, they're letting website visitors create and customize their own. The MyFCC tool is still in the beta testing stage, but the idea is to let users choose from a menu of widgets to tap into the FCC's most commonly requested data sources to build a custom dashboard. And the FCC is letting users log in with credentials from third parties like Google or Facebook, so they have one fewer password to remember.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology, and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com. The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight is the Capital Area Food Bank. Sitting down to three meals a day shouldn't be a choice, but over 640,000 residents in the National Capital Region are forced to choose daily. Record numbers of families and children are struggling to get enough food to eat. Help the Capital Area Food Bank feed our neighbors in need. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com. This message brought to you by Papa John's and Federal News Radio.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose. On Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, Dan Kent is the Federal Chief Technology Officer at Cisco, and he is my guest on Industry Chatter. And I mentioned there was a nugget that you talked about as we were wrapping up the last segment that I wanted to expand on a little bit, and that is the idea of understanding how the bad guys are doing what they're doing and using that same concept to make networks secure.
Sure.
And you talked about something during the commercial that I think is a really fascinating idea, and that is the idea that everything on the network should be talking at the same time.
Yeah, honestly, this is a cat and mouse game,
mm-hmm.
right? So we understand that there's attacks coming in, and they might at first attack the operating system. We try to patch the operating system, fix that. Well, the bad guys know, and what do they do next? They go attack something else,
mm-hmm.
right? The hypervisor. If it's not the hypervisor, it's something. So there's always this cat and mouse. We believe that the best approach to addressing this is to really use the infrastructure as the sensor. We call it the network as a sensor.
Mm-hmm.
So every device that's out there, and obviously the network is pervasive, right? You have, everywhere you have an end device, it's talking to something, and that something is the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And so if every device on the infrastructure can actually be smart enough to feed back anomalous action. And then you have that coming from various aspects of your infrastructure, you can start to coordinate what's actually happening on your network.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, it could be as simple as, two or three files being sent once every third month that, you know, the end user on the device would never know it's happening because it happens at a certain point of day. And at that time, it's very indeterministic when it happens. But the infrastructure would know. The infrastructure, we could very quickly put a profile on every device on the network. A printer should only be printing. It should never be sending anything out. Now, if my printer all of a sudden is sending a file out, I've got a problem. And my network is smart enough to be able to understand what the devices are and what should be doing what. So so we believe that as we talk about this network as a sensor, we can make the network be an intelligent device. And I talk about it in a big D word because it's thousands of devices that actually become that sensor, all coming back to a single visibility tool. And that's where we see the evolution of the network happening. It has to be smarter. It has to be able to be a cyber player, much more so. So certainly you can continue to put your applications, you know, your firewalls on your servers and on your endpoints. But let's make the network a little bit smarter. And that's really what Cisco is doing and has been doing for the last couple of years and will be continuing to do as we allow that great information to get into the cyber, the analyst's hands and eyes so they can actually make decisions with that.
We just have about a minute left. I had two thoughts as you were talking about that. One of them you addressed with the visibility tool is how do you collect all that information in one place so that a limited number of eyes can be aware of what's going on in the network, and you mentioned that. The other is the advantage that I think that you might get from a system like that is you're forcing the bad guys then to focus a lot of time on making sure that those anomalies continue to not look like anomalies, and they're spending potentially as much time on that or more as they are on trying to formulate the actual penetrations.
It makes it certainly harder, right?
Yeah.
Because and the more the agency has measured and documented the traffic behaviors on the network, it's the easier those anomalies are to find. And so we're all about, and that's when I talk about cyber hygiene, understanding what the network flows are, what the traffic flows are, what devices should be going where. And in large scale, that's not easy. If you only had 100 devices, it's fairly easy to do, but most of our agencies have thousands of devices. So, but we now have the visibility tools to make that happen. And so we think it's the right way to attack cybersecurity.